few moments that we have left, we want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Your source for everything paranormal.
Views and opinions expressed by the host and tonight's guest are not necessarily those of this radio network, its affiliates, or its sponsors. Listener discretion is advised. Now lock your doors, open your minds, and prepare yourself to go
beyond the edge.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We have ignition.
Sit down, strap in, and hold on tight. You're about to be taken beyond the edge.
Just when you thought it was safe. Beyond the Edge Radio is back.
Lock your doors.
Open your minds. Beyond the Edge Radio is back.
Better than electroshock therapy. Beyond the Edge Radio is back.
And your great-granddaddy's talk radio show. This is Beyond the Edge Radio.
Beyond the Edge Radio.
Promise me.
Looking home for the best in alternative talk radio.
New guests, new topics,
and a new sound.
All new BTE Radio.
Beyond the Edge Radio, your source for the best alternative talk radio with an attitude.
Where else would you spend your Sunday nights?
Beyond the Edge Radio.
If you're not listening, you're just stupid.
And good evening and welcome yet to another edition of BTE Radio. It's Sunday night. It's a few minutes after 8 o'clock here on the East Coast, and I am your host with the ghost flu. My name is Eric Altman. Down and out for the count after a very long and fun weekend at ParaFest 2013, but I'm back home and ready to bring you another great edition of BTE Radio. With me, as always, your co-host with the most from Phantoms and Monsters and Astral Perceptions, the one and only Lon Strickler. Good evening, Lon. How are you, my friend?
Hey, Eric. Yeah, I'm just trying to behave, I guess.
And speaking of behaving, our very well-behaved color commentator, the Fork Chop and fellow founder of BTE Radio. Good evening, Sean. How are you tonight, sir?
Lies, all lies. I've never behaved, but I'm doing great. I'm better than you, ghost flu.
I got the ghost flu in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, in room 908 of the Bethlehem Hotel. I don't know how I got it. I went feeling perfectly fine and left this morning feeling like I got run over by a truck.
A ghost truck.
A ghost truck, yeah.
Well, these things, they happen. You know, it's that end of summer cold, I think, combined with whatever weird supernatural things were going on in that place.
Well, that's what I heard from our good friend, Stan Gordon, today, is that other people on the ninth floor of the Bethlehem Hotel were experiencing ghostly activity, people sitting on their beds while they were sleeping, being touched, something getting into bed with them. Now, I experienced no ghostly activity in my room. Nobody got into bed with me.
That could have been the spirits of other sorts causing people to get into bed with them.
That's possible, but no, nothing got in bed with me. I had a really good chicken bacon ranch pizza last night, well, part of it, and I felt fine, other than a sinus headache on Saturday and Friday, you know, other than an ice box for a hotel room, I had a great time. Just if I could real quick, before we talk a little bit about tonight's guest, just give a quick review of ParaFest 2013. This was probably one of the largest events that I've attended in a long, long time. And literally the who's who of the paranormal and the who's who of the horror movie genre were there at this event. And I got to meet a lot of great new people who some of them will be joining us on the radio program in the near future. And I got to see some old dear friends this week at the event. Speaking of people I got to see and got to hang out with, of course, Stan Gordon, our good friend and many-time ghost guest here on the show. I've got ghost on the brain. Our many-time guest on the program, Stan Gordon, rode out with me to Parafest and rode back with me today. I was in the booth next to our other good friend, Ken Gerhard, who will be on the show next week talking about his new book, Encounters with Flying Humanoids, and he signed a copy for me, so thank you, Ken, for that. I appreciate it. I got to run into a lot of good friends of ours. David Roundtree and Tracy Ray were there. Daniel Hooven. Patrick Burns, Marley Gibson were there. The guy with the alligators that peed all over the floor was there.
Oh, how quaint.
Yeah. He had a 4 or 5 foot long alligator that he taped the mouth up with duct tape, and he had a small, like, 2 foot alligator. He had several tarantulas, several boa constrictors, and was taking pictures with people with a boa around their neck. But the alligator peed on the floor. It was pretty funny.
Yes, and speaking of which, that was the cause of last week's technical difficulty.
The alligator peed on the floor.
Was a pissing alligator. So yes.
That's the no tornadoes, but a pissing alligator.
No tornadoes, but a pissing alligator.
Right. Also got to see other good friends of ours that we've talked to in the past, like Bill Bean. He was there. The Booth brothers were there. Philip and Christopher Booth were on hand. Our good friend Rosalind Bound was there. Brian Cano, Chris Mancuso. Chris had a booth next to me. I got to talk with Chris during the weekend. Coming to the program, and I'm really happy to hear this, is our good friend Chip Coffey. He's agreed to come on the show, so we're going to have him on in the near future. We're going to have folks are going to be happy to hear this, from Ghost Hunters, the father of Dave Tango, Bruce Tango, has agreed to come on the show anytime we ask him, and one of the original founders of TAPS and star of the Ghost Hunters TV show, Grant Wilson, will be on the show in the very near future as well. Very cool guys. I met Dave Tango. I met Steve Gonzalez, Bruce Tango, Grant Wilson. Fantastic guys. A lot of fun to hang out and chat with. Of course, our good friends Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis and Mally Fox from Darkness Radio were there. Our dear friend and many-time guest on the program, Rosemary Ellen Galli, was there. It was just, like I said, a who's who of paranormal guests that were on hand. Two future guests who are going to be on the show coming up in October that I got a chance to talk to and get to know a little bit and became fast friends with is J.F. Unger and Krista Cesare. Now, both gentlemen are in a new movie that was just released to DVD called Please Talk With Me, the true story of the C2D1 haunting that took place in Genosia College in New York. And our good friend Reverend Tim Shaw has written a book based on the movie. It's a supplemental book to go along with the movie. And the first weekend of October, I believe, we're going to have Chris and Jeff and Tim on the program, and joining them also will be our good friend Bill Bean. He'll be on to also contribute to the fact that those guys survived extreme haunting, and Bill will be in there to throw some color commentary in there as well. So the first weekend in October is going to kick off Shocktober in fashion, as we have four great guests that night. We've got Krista Cesare, J. Jeff Unger, the Reverend Tim Shaw, and Bill Bean coming on the program. That's going to be a phenomenal show, guys.
Well, it sounds like we've got Shocktober kicking off with a little bit of spice.
That we do. That we do. And speaking of Bruce Tango, who I had a chance to talk with, a really wonderful man, very down to earth, and he's doing a wonderful thing, and I told him I'd give him a plug for this, and we'll continue to plug it for him on the show. He's throwing a Halloween party. And this is going to be taking place on October 12th, 2013. It's called the Monster Mash Mayhem. It's the largest Halloween party of the year. It's taking place at the Temple Emmanuel Hall, 756 East Broad Street in Westfield, New Jersey. Doors open at 5. The party starts at 6:30 and lasts until 11. Tickets are $56 each, but it includes a celebrity meet and greet, dinner, world-class live entertainment, all-night-long dancing contest, many prizes and surprises along the way. Just a quick rundown of some of the guests that are going to be on hand, and this is a really cool lineup. Cousin It, you know him as Cousin It, Felix Silva, And he was also Tweaky in Buck Rogers, and he played an Ewok in the Return of the Jedi movies. Kylie Szymanski, who played Penny Blake, the governor's daughter in The Walking Dead. Mike Kosky, who was a walker from The Walking Dead. Jerry Rischel, who played Jan Brady in The Brady Bunch Hour. Joe Chin from Ghost Hunters International. Bruce Tango from Ghost Hunters. Our good friend Brian Cano from Haunted Collector. Mike Christopher from Dawn of the Dead. He was the Hare Krishna zombie, if you remember him. Brett McGinnis from Ghost Hunters Academy. Cece the Huntress. Kristen Sellers, who was a singing sensation from the TV show You're Going to Be a Star. Rock with the Shock personality from right here at Para X. He'll be on the program. Gentleman Jim, he's an Elvis Presley impersonator. And fine. MJX, a Michael Jackson impersonator. So pretty cool lineup of guests.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
you don't see too many of those.
No, you don't. A Michael Jackson impersonator to kick off the entertainment that night. But a great event nonetheless to help raise money for a great cause. And they're having an auction for Grant Wilson's two-year-old nephew who was diagnosed with cancer recently to help raise funds for medical bills. We've contributed as a show. BTE Radio has contributed to the auction, some cool prizes. And to find out more about Bruce's event, go to MonsterMashParty.com. Again, MonsterMashParty.com. It's going to be a phenomenal event, October the 12th. It's going to take place in Westfield, New Jersey. Tickets are $56, and it runs from 6:30 till 11 o'clock that night. So, I can't breathe now because my chest is hurting, but...
Will you take a second and insert that tube, and Lon and I will take over your...
I'm going to turn things over to Lon to find out what's been going on over at Phantoms and Monsters. So, guys, discuss amongst yourselves. I'm feeling a little verklempt.
I don't know where to go from that, Lon. How about you?
I guess I should talk about maybe something I had sent in here. I guess a couple weeks ago, but I don't think I mentioned it last week. But this is the cat people. Did I talk about the cat people last week?
Yeah, I don't know.
No. Okay. Well, actually, this was sent to me by Albert Rosales, and we all know Albert from the Humanoid Sightings Report and Journal of Humanoid Studies down in Miami. The incident came from an area that, for whatever reason, has a whole lot of crazy stuff going on. It's an area down in southwest Florida. Sarasota County, basically. The area is inside Sarasota County, Northport, Punta Gorda, Port Charlotte, Miyaka State Park, which we all know, and Sarasota itself. It does have some of the strangest humanoid, cryptid, and supernatural phenomena actually in the world. Because I have received so many reports from here, that area, over the years. reptilians, Nordics, grays, skunk apes, of course, werewolves, even dragons. Now, this time we've got a bipedal cat person, or cat people, let's put it that way. The witness... who actually back in the 70s had a very dramatic UFO encounter down in Florida. posted this report. She said she was on the beach down in southwest Florida. This is down in, and this was actually August of last year. She was on a beach in southwest Florida, and she encountered two quite unusual beings that she said she knew were from an off-world. Standing about 6 or 8 foot from her was a man and a woman that looked to be about 70 years in age who were in full body suits. Now, you know, of course, this isn't something you normally see in the beaches of Florida because of the hot temperature and the warm waters. Their heads were covered and they were quite thin. All that was exposed were their faces and hands. Now, what was so notable was the highly unusual look on their face, well, what they looked like in their faces. They looked like cats without fur. When she saw them, she knew immediately what she said now, that they were from another planet. Now, there was eye contact between them and a somewhat type of telepathic communication, acknowledging that she noticed them as non-human, and they were confirming it, she said to them. They then proceeded to go out into the Gulf waters without tanks and swim much further out than normally a person would go out there. And she watched them for what seemed like a half an hour, and they just simply disappeared. Now that's an odd one. Cat people. I mean, we're going to be talking about dog men tonight, but cat people, that's a new one.
Well, we've just gone to the birds.
Quite frankly, I don't think I've ever had a cat person sighting. I don't know. I mean, I it had to be another somewhere down the line. But
well, I've never heard of one before, so it's new to me.
We'll be talking about dog men tonight, so kind
yeah,
of
that's what I'm saying. I mean, that's a strange one. So, anyway, we've got a... for a while now, I've been talking about this habituation location up in the Canadian Maritimes. And the gentleman that lives there, him and his family, he's been reporting all kinds of crazy stuff over the past year. Mm-hmm. And apparently he had an interesting encounter. It was about a couple weeks ago. And... it was an eye shine encounter, but his dog reacted like crazy. So he has been reporting the Bigfoot sightings in and around his property. So this is the first one he's had in a couple of months. But that's not the only thing that's going on. There is a lot of paranormal activity too. He's getting these, and I like to call them sprites. Just imagine, you know, when you're a kid, you played with balls and jacks, those, you know, multi-jagged little pieces of metal that you used to play with.
Mm-hmm.
He had one of these, or maybe several of them, that were perfectly shaped like a jack, all lit up, floating around his property. And I did have a picture of one. I put it up on the website. Most unusual thing, very unusual. And in fact, he sent me another photograph this week of some type of apparition that reminded me of a large bird. And I don't know where this stuff is. You know, this is just his location. There's been a lot of UFO activity there anyway. And you know, it's a hot spot, basically. And it just seems to be one of those areas, like we have discussed so many times before, that paranormal and supernatural activity just takes place.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we have talked about it, that we would like to go up there one time and, you know, check it out and see what's going on, possibly investigate it a couple of days.
Yeah, we were talking about that off air. I think that'd be a good thing to do.
Yeah, it's a great. I mean, it seems like a great study area to me. But
well, something to put in the still on the bucket list there, Lon.
Yeah, really. I mean, it's gonna just because of the location, and I don't want to give out the specific location, mm-hmm. but it's not gonna be the easiest place in the world to get to.
No, sir.
But you know, none of these places are easy to get to.
Well, that's part. The journey is part of the fun.
Yeah. So hopefully we can do that. I mentioned it to him, and he's really, you know, he'd really be looking forward to us going up there and take a look, because you know it's got him concerned. You know, he doesn't know what's going on, and. You know, he's been putting out trail cams for over a year now. He did pick up something hairy or whatever that did come into the view of the trail cam at one point. And, you know, his descriptions of what he has seen is really, really interesting. He has sketched these beings. He's taken some casts of some of the footprints. They look very similar to Bigfoot casts that, you know, you see all over the world. And, you know, some of the encounters that he has mentioned and he has described are very interesting. He's come across a lot of scat evidence. And, you know, stuff he describes is just, you know, just really piqued my interest in this location. Even UFO activity, some of the UFOs, and actually one encounter that he had mentioned about this circle, I guess, or large orb that looked like glass that actually came down into the field across from his home. And when it left, that's where that three-toed track, that large three-toed track, that's where that track was found. So I don't know what is exactly going on there, but it does seem to be drawing or producing a lot of strange phenomena.
Well, hopefully we can get down there and find out.
Yeah, I'd really love to go up there.
Or get up there, or geographically, yeah, wherever it's located. We'll get there.
Yeah. So,
very good.
You got something to talk about, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I mean, it's not really paranormal or anything related, but you know me, I like to find a cause to talk about on the program whenever I can. And a good friend of mine, an old friend of mine, Laura Cozentine, posted on her Facebook page this project called Project Drive-In. And it's being run by the Honda company. And the purpose of it is to help save American drive-ins. What a lot of people don't know is that those drive-ins that we take for granted, starting next year, if they don't have digital projector systems, they're not going to be able to play movies anymore. And you're looking at $85,000 to pay for the new equipment, and it would take anywhere from 10 to 15 years for these drive-in theaters to pay it off. So many of them aren't going to be able to afford it. 368 drive-in theaters left in the United States. And when you go to projectdrivein.org, drivein.com, there are four things you can do. You can spread the word by posting it on social media. You can vote for your favorite drive-in to get one of five projectors that the Honda company's putting out there. You can contribute yourself, you know, donate some of your own money. And then you can take a pledge to go to a drive-in for the remainder of the summer. I think it's really neat, Lon. You know, you and I off air were talking about how drive-ins were, you know, a good part of our growing up and the fun and the memories we had of them. And I'd like to see them around for a long time to come. And this is just a way for everybody, kind of a grassroots kind of way to get in there and support these drive-ins. You know, we don't have very many things left from that golden age. Let's try to preserve this.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, you know, I grew up in the 60s, and like I was telling you, we used to have an old Rambler. We had a 62 AMC Rambler, and used to pack my sister and I in there and go watch the drive-in movies. And, you know, like, it was a fond memory of ours. I mean, it was something we did six or seven, eight times a summer. And, you know, it was an experience we all remember. And, unfortunately, I know my kids haven't experienced that because there were, you know, no drive-ins around.
Well, so, the first experience I had with a drive-in with my kids, I killed the battery in our car. So luckily somebody was there to jump us and get us back going. And that was a fun time, I can remember. But I always remember going with my dad. $5 a carload, we packed as many of my friends in as we could and went and seen movies, the double features. And think of some of the great movies you've seen in the drive-ins. And, you know, just think about it, folks. You know, you're looking for something to do this summer. At least go to the drive-in once before it ends and vote for your favorite drive-in. And if you can, spare a couple dimes, throw it their way so we can keep some of these places open. 368, I'd hate to see most of them close because they can't afford this equipment they're being forced to buy.
Yeah, I agree. It's a worthy project. It's Americana that, you know, you just like to see stick around, just like the old the drive-in restaurants and such.
That's right.
Yeah, you just don't have that stuff anymore.
You know what, Sean?
It's a feel-good thing.
If they do shut down, we could always go and do shadow puppets.
That's right. Well, we're good at that.
Yes. We could still entertain. Shadow puppets and broadcast BTE radio.
There you go. Coming to you live from the abandoned drive-in this week.
That's right. We could travel around the country doing live shows.
But, yeah, that's all I got to talk about here. I mean, we're getting ready for some Bigfoot in here later this month, and some good, exciting events coming up that way. Eric, you have any more events that you got to be to this year?
Yeah, I got the para or the horrorconpa.com. It's October 26th and 27th at the Ross Straver Ice Gardens in Ross Straver or Belle Vernon, Pennsylvania. The website is horror-con-pa.com, and they got some pretty cool guests coming. If I can pull it up real quick, I can give you a quick rundown.
Belle Vernon's a little closer to home for you.
It's only like maybe 40 minutes away. So
it's nice when you get them close by. You know.
Yeah, it really helps. But yeah, it's horror-con-pa.com. Some of the guests include Bill Bean, our good buddy Bill. Chris Dedman, who will be on the show at the end of this month. Jonathan Moody is a filmmaker who created a film called Scary Stories Slumber Party. Say that 10 times fast. Mm. And he's also working on a new movie called The Invited, which is actually a web series. And he's working on a feature film called Sasquatch vs. Yeti.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
They're kind of like War of the Gargantuas?
It could be. It very well could be. Reverend Robin Marie, she's a medium and a holistic life coach. Christopher Cerrone, you know him as young Henry Hill from Goodfella, or Goodfellas, I should say. Our good buddy Stan Gordon. You've got yours truly, Rosalind Bowne, Black Cross Paranormal, Russell Stiver, the Maestro, a.k.a. the Stro from WCW fame, Brenda Lee Roth, who is the daughter of David Lee Roth, and I don't think she wants to be associated with that, but... Anthony Caliano is a filmmaker, and he's also the guy who's putting on the event. And you can find out more information, as I said, horror-con-pa.com. It is taking place October 26th and 27th at the Ross Straver Ice Gardens in Belle Vernon, PA. And he'll be adding more guests to the event. So that should be pretty interesting to check out. But we have got a great guest on tonight's show that I think we should talk about for a minute or two before we bring her on.
Yeah, it might help.
Her name is Linda Godfrey. She is an investigative reporter, an author, an investigator in her own right, an artist with a penchant for Lhasa Aspo. I can't even speak. I'm so stuffed up. Lhasa Aspos, or werewolves.
Okay.
That's what it says in her bio. But she's out of southeast Wisconsin. She's written many books, including Real Wolfmen, The True Counters in Modern America, as well as Weird Wisconsin, Weird Michigan, and many other books on dogmen, werewolves, the Michigan Dogmen, Haunted Wisconsin, I already mentioned. And she's going to be coming on the show in just a few minutes to talk about some of these encounters and experiences people claim to have had with the werewolves, the lycan or lycanthropy, and dogmen in that area. And we're going to talk to her about a really cool episode that appeared on Paranormal Witness back in August, I believe it was, called The Wolf Pack.
Yeah, first week of August. Mm-hmm.
That was a hell of an episode.
Oh, it was.
Right. Just a quick synopsis. It was called The Wolf Pack, and it was about a family known as the Martin family who moved into a cabin in the woods, and they were harassed by some strange dogmen-like creatures, approximately five of them, that... basically harassed them at their house, surrounded them, wouldn't let them leave the property, and it was a really frightening tale. And we're going to get to the bottom of the real case with Linda tonight on the program, so that should be exciting to talk to her about that as well.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to this. We haven't talked to Linda, you know, and I was telling you, we haven't had Linda on since September of 2011. I was shocked. I thought we've had her on since then, but apparently not.
So did I. I thought she was on a lot sooner than that. But we're really happy to have Linda coming back on the show tonight. Just getting set for the Halloween season as fall sets in. We're just a few weeks away from Shocktober, I should say. And Linda is a great way to get things started, get us in the mood for all things spooky and scary. And I can't wait to have her on the show. So she'll be up in just a few minutes, guys. So why don't we jump into our break? We come back. We've got Linda Godfrey joining us here at BTE Radio, live on the Para X Radio Network.
Sounds fun. Back,
relax, and crack a cold one. Beyond the Edge Radio will be right back.
Clap for the Wolfman. He gon' reach your record high. Clap for the Wolfman. You gon' dig in till the day you die. Two Run and the Duke of Earl, they were friends of mine. The hot was on my moonlight drive.
Shock therapy. Beyond the Edge Radio is back.
I saw a werewolf with a Chinese menu in his hand, walking through the streets of Soho in the rain. He was looking for the place called Lee Ho Fooks. Gonna get a big dish of beef chow mein.
Yeah, it's the Werewolves of London. Warren Zevon bringing us back from the break. This is BTE Radio live here on the Para X Radio Network. It is Sunday night, 8:38, and we've got a great guest on tonight's program. If you like dogmen and werewolves, then we've got a great guest on the show. It's been almost 2 years since we've had this lovely lady on with us, and I do apologize because I thought it was a lot sooner than that, but Lon has told me it's been 2 years, but we're very happy to have Linda back with us tonight. Please, folks, give us a warm welcome, and welcome back to the program, Linda Godfrey. Good evening, Linda. How are you, my friend?
Good evening. I'm terrific, and I hope you guys are too. I'm real excited to be here.
We are pleased as punch to have you back with us and excited to talk to you. It's been 2 years, as I said, and a lot's happened with you in those 2 years.
Yeah, you know, the creatures don't rest. They just keep doing things, and people keep writing about it, and then I have to write about it, and it goes on and on.
That it does. It no rest for the weary, they say.
And exactly.
Yeah, you've had a new book come out recently, and you're working on another book, and you've had some strange encounters. The reports keep coming in. You even had a Bigfoot sighting you were telling us off air, so plenty to talk about with you tonight on the show.
Definitely.
So let's talk about the book that came out most recent that you wrote about. I'm really excited about this, Real Wolfmen, True Encounters in Modern America.
Right. Yeah, that came out from Tarcher Penguin this year, 2013, and it's a nice fat book. What they actually asked me to do this, what they wanted was the best of the best reports from the Beast of Bray Road book, Hunting the American Werewolf, and then the third one on that topic, the Michigan Dogman, Werewolves and Upright Canines from Across the U.S., and then add in the best of the new reports I'd gotten since those books were written, and add, of course, all the theory and the usual other things that I write about, so that it would be sort of a compendium of the top stories. And that's what it came out to be, and it's been received very well.
I've seen some reviews of it, and excellent reviews. People are loving the book. They really are.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. So it was interesting. It's always interesting to write about these things.
Most definitely. Now, can you share some of these great cases with us? I'd love to hear some of the fascinating cases. You said the best of the best, so lay some on us if you wouldn't mind.
Well, you know, they're kind of interspersed through the book in a different order. They're not chronologically ordered like they are in some of the other books. But one of my favorites, just because it's sort of odd, is that, and it happened in Mansfield, Ohio in 2008.
Oh, not far from us.
Exactly, yeah. Cool. And Ohio, you know, is really known as a big Bigfoot sighting state. So
yes.
when you get something to do with man-wolves, it's a little different. But I find that usually where there are sightings of one, if you dig a little bit, you'll find sightings of the other. You know, I really think that they like to occupy similar territories, but they have their own turf that they defend against one another. That's just based on my extrapolation from sightings and things like that. But anyway, these two sisters were in this mobile home park. One of them lived there. The other one was visiting. And they decided to take a little nighttime walk around the mobile home park. This was after dark. And they're walking along. And all of a sudden, they see two dark-furred, quote-unquote, dogs. Except they notice the dogs are standing on their hind legs and looking at them and kind of, you know, just hanging around, standing upright. They were only 15 feet away. That's wow. Really close.
Yeah.
You know, that's like the dimension of a small bedroom away.
That's like reach out and touch someone.
Exactly, yeah. And and they were very well illuminated from a nearby mobile home's porch light that was shining right on them. So it wasn't like they were seeing bears or something else instead. They had a very clear look. Of course, they turned around and ran all the way back to their mobile home. And luckily, the creatures didn't chase them. But they were so curious about it that they hopped in a car and thought, well, we'll be safe if we drive back there, you know, and just stay in the car. So they drive back there, and the creatures are still there. But this time, the headlights hit them, and I guess the extra light they didn't like. They turned around, and they trotted into the woods, still on their hind legs. You know, so these were bipedal creatures, not just, you know, for some reason standing up. They were definitely running on their hind legs. And they described the dogs as somewhere between a German Shepherd and a Doberman in appearance, which is something that I get a lot, with tall, pointed ears, black, shaggy fur. And the one who wrote me said, we named them were-dogs because they reminded us of a mix between a dog and a werewolf, she wrote. And I often think, based on 20 years of experience, that a lot of the creatures people describe sound like what they would call a wolf dog or a cross between a wolf and a dog of different types, especially with the dark fur. They stood about 5 feet tall, ran with their forelimbs bent out in front of them, which tells you it's canine structure. It's not, you know, like some kind of super steroid lichen with big shoulders or anything. Mm-hmm. And that's how really most, the huge share of reports that I get describe that sort of structure. And the odd thing about this one was that, and I've never really heard this with any other incident, was that they made a pronounced clicking noise when they ran. And I don't know if this mobile home had asphalt. It's something I wasn't able to find out for some reason. But it could be just the sound of their toenails or claws hitting the asphalt. Some mobile home parks do and others don't. But they went back the next morning. They were not going to follow them into the woods. They were, you know, too smart for that. But they went back the next morning and looked, and they saw that in the direction where these creatures had disappeared into the woods, there was a huge brush pile. And they heard that same clicking sound coming from the brush pile, which makes me think that it wasn't their claws, you know, running on some sort of asphalt.
Wow.
Mm.
Yeah, so, and I did, this one, you know, people always say, well, there's no science to it, there's no evidence. I do try to think scientifically about these things once in a while. You know, if I can come up with any sort construe any sort of theory, I'll try and check it out. And it occurred to me that animals, when they get arthritis, say in their hips, or which often dogs have this sort of thing, the bones will make clicking sounds. You know, this is a well-known thing. I had a dog that had that problem. Mm-hmm. And I actually went and checked with Professor Rolf Peterson of the Michigan Technical University in Houghton, Michigan. And he's the guy who runs the study on the Isle Royale study of wolves up in Lake Superior. It's this isolated wolf pack that they have all radio collared, and they can come in there, they can swoop, you know, check out where they are, who lives, who dies. And I thought, surely I read that they'd had back problems. And I thought, well, maybe if they were having hip and back problems, that would cause them to stand upright, you know, to relieve it. If their normal posture was on all fours, maybe standing up would correct that in their hips. And so the clicking noise was just the sound of the hips, and the upright posture was them trying to get relief. But unfortunately, Professor Peterson told me that the Isle Royale wolves had back problems, not hip problems, so there wouldn't have been any clicking sounds. So, you know, there that shot down another theory. But I was still trying always to figure out some biological reason why canines in the wild would run around on their hind limbs. And just so far, I've struck out. After 20 years of trying, I haven't come across anything, really.
Yeah, I mean, there's no really back paw structure that would allow them to stand. They'd almost be balancing the whole time if it was a regular canine or a wolf.
Maybe they're show dogs.
I don't know.
Well, you know, you can go on YouTube and you can, like, search for merengue dancing dog or Faith the Wonder Dog, and you can see these little dogs that have been either mostly trained by humans. It can happen in the wild, too, if they're missing a forelimb, although I've never had anybody report seeing one that was missing a forelimb. But the thing is that when people describe these unknown upright canines, they're remarkably consistent in saying that the features are almost completely 100% canine. You know, they're not saying I see human faces. They're always describing the pointed upright ears, the little arms out in front like your dog in a begging position. They'll say the legs are bent backwards, meaning that they're walking on their toe pads and you're looking for the knee where there is no knee, you know, that kind of thing. But the one thing that people will sometimes say is, you know, it had paws, not hands. It had paws with claws, but they seemed longer than a normal dog's paws. And that's borne out in the cases where we do have prints left behind and tracks. They are bigger, wider, longer paws than you would find even usually on a very large timber wolf.
Interesting. You know, it's interesting.
It could be that it's an adaptation, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I had a report not long ago from down in the Dolly Sods area of West Virginia. And I know there have been some Bigfoot sightings down there, but this description was pretty wild. And he didn't really come out and say it was a dog man or a werewolf or a wolf or whatever. But he did say it stood 7 foot tall and it had black hair. And it looked like it was walking on two very strong legs that looked human. But the body was like that of a racing dog. And he said, in other words, had the large chest and the small waist and hips.
Like a walking greyhound.
Yeah, like a walking greyhound.
That's how most of them are. They'll be described as having a very narrow, tapering waist. And then they will say, well, but they had muscular thighs, which makes sense because they're using their upper legs in a position that you normally don't see dogs using their upper legs for. You know, so they're developing muscles that normally don't get developed in a normal quadruped. So that makes sense.
Yeah, but the weird thing about this was that he did say he saw the arms and hands, and they almost looked like human, and because he was carrying something. So
yeah,
you know,
and that's unusual. Now, sometimes I think there have been some cases where people have seen elongated paws and interpreted them as hands, but there's a certain small subset of the sightings that look like what some people like to call the lichens, or you know, to me they seem like something different. They're not like the normal canine structured creatures that most people, and when I say most, I mean well over 90%, report the normal canine structure. But there's a certain subset that seem to have some sort of connection with maybe something a little supernatural. Maybe they're connected with shapeshifters or skinwalkers or something like that, where they do look much more pronouncedly humanoid with shoulders. Canines don't have shoulders, you know, so when you see something with big shoulders, you know, that's not a canine body. If you see hands, you know, or they're walking flat-footed rather than on toe pads, those are not canine characteristics. And I do get them in a very small percentage. And I don't rule out the fact that a very small percentage of the sightings could be of something that's different.
Mm-hmm. And that was going to be my question. How many times do you think that, you know, these dogman sightings are, you know, misidentifications of perhaps another type of animal or another type of cryptid?
Well, that happens too. You know, there are times, once in a while, I'll get a report where somebody will say, well, I saw this brown fur upright thing running through the woods. I couldn't see its head or its legs or how tall it was, you know, but it had brown fur and it was running through the woods. That doesn't really help me much because it could have been a bear, it could have mm-hmm. been a Bigfoot, it could have been a dog man, it could have been a person in a gorilla suit. You know, you can't make a very positive ID from that. And there have been times where people have had sightings in low light where they couldn't really make out the head features. Where it sounds really like a cryptid and not a bear, but you can't tell which one. So there, of course, there are another small percentage that I'm sure are misidentifications. I'm sure another small percentage is hoaxers. You know, the hoaxers are out there, and they could be interpreted in different ways, too.
We can't leave out the fact that it could have been Sean on a late-night run to the pizza place.
It could have. You know, my barbershop hasn't been open for a couple weeks now, and I'm starting to look a little shaggy. So I need to...
Oh, there you go.
Have you run across any – you were talking about hoaxers. Have you run across any deliberate hoaxing of a wolf creature or a dog man?
Sure.
Oh, have you?
Sure. It does happen. I mean, there are – and. Every time that a report comes into me, you know, crosses my email, I'm always looking for certain markers and things, mm-hmm. you know, because you never know. There are certain things that I've learned to look out for. There are some people that I've just asked that I suspected and asked point blank, are you lying to me? Are you telling the truth? You know, I really need to know. And they've lied at first and then backed out.
Mm-hmm.
I had one guy who had really kind of an amazing sighting, and I did really believe him, who backed out saying he got really nervous. He said, I'm afraid my kids are going to get made fun of in school, so I'm just taking it all back. I made it all up, you know, but I actually didn't believe him that he made it up. I think he just got cold feet, you know, and was nervous about being ridiculed or something, which does happen, you know. But on Bray Road alone, I know of at least three different hoaxers over the years, you know, sets of hoaxers. And they especially like to come out in Halloween. But there are certain ways that hoaxers act and certain places they appear. And it's kind of – and also I've never really been able to match chronologically a known hoax sighting to what I would consider a real sighting, you know – I can never say, oh, well, this explains that one,
uh-huh.
you know, because this was the night of and these sightings happened that night. I've never been able to match any up that way. And most people, it's really hard to pull off, you know, running across a road and convince people that you're an animal when you're not.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah.
It's just harder than you think. It's the same way as, you know, I'll get these photographs of people, you know, wearing a gorilla suit in a cornfield or, you know, a wolf mask covered with mud. And it's just really hard to pull that off. There's just always something really wrong about it.
Well, speaking of incidents, let's get into this Palmyra, Maine wolf pack incident that was portrayed on Paranormal Witness Show, I guess about the beginning of August.
Careful, and I have to sleep tonight.
You were the lead investigator in that case.
Right.
Well, why don't you describe it and kind of refresh everybody's memory?
Well, yeah, this was a really amazing sighting and one that I spent a lot of time talking to the witnesses. And one of the really big things about it was that it was a husband and wife, middle-aged professional people who were really – some of the very most credible people that you ever could have imagined to have something like this. And it happened in Maine, which is a state where I haven't really had much in the way of dogman sightings. So, you know, that was unusual. And it was about really only, it was 2007, so it's not all that long ago either. And this was a couple who were renting a nice farmhouse. The husband was recuperating from some physical problems, and they had a habit, they're not, you know, drinkers or anything like that. They had a habit of sitting out on their front porch drinking a late night cup of coffee, and they kept a spotlight on their porch because there was a pond on the property and deer would come along and they liked to see the deer. And they're sitting out there and they got really strong bad vibes, and the husband suddenly told Shelley she should go into the house, and she didn't. Instead, she shined the spotlight. And that's when they saw these creatures. There were three of them coming right up in front of them, maybe from about 20 feet away, I think. They were almost in a crawling position when they first saw them. Mm-hmm. And they stood up later. Rose sprang into a lope and used their back legs only. They ran to the right around the side of the pond so the water was between us. But then they discovered there were two other ones, and they were sort of flanking them. You know, it was like a military exercise almost, except they're these five upright creatures. And they knew that they were probably about 7 feet tall because they passed in front of a shed door that of which they knew the height. And anybody who watched the Paranormal Witness episode knows that his guns were locked outside in an outbuilding because Shelley didn't want them in the house. So
that's what amazed me.
yeah, and that was true. But and so they made it into the house, and he had gone out once or tried to go out unsuccessfully, and then it actually didn't come out until they were filming. I didn't know this originally because he didn't want to admit it to Shelley, but he had sneaked back out while she was upstairs with their daughter to try a second time to get to the truck and then bring the truck up. And that came out when they were filming The Paranormal Witness, and that was the first time Shelley heard of it too. So that's why that wasn't in my account. But anyway.
What's funny, Linda, if I can interrupt you real quick. Sure. What's funny is during the episode, I found myself screaming at the TV when he went outside.
I know.
I kept saying, you're injured, man. Don't go outside.
I just found myself screaming a lot.
And he knew 5-7 foot tall, wolf-like upright creatures were right out there. It's not like they ran away or anything. They were just on the other side of the house. You know, so yeah, he's a pretty brave man. But the amazing thing is, you know, that they called 911. 911 just told them to call the game warden. They tried the game warden. The game warden told them just to stay in the house with the doors shut all night, which, of course, duh, and never did come out. So they had no help. They were isolated there. They did not take knives and axes to bed with them like it showed on the TV.
I was just going to ask if they took any liberties with the story.
Oh, they took a lot of liberties. Yeah, they made a lot more of some things, like, for instance, the lights in the beginning. They made it into a lot more. It was mentioned to me, but it wasn't anything as pronounced or dramatic as was shown on TV.
Well, and that was one of the questions I was going to ask, because off when we were watching the episode, we watched it at different times, but we have an ongoing chat all the time. And I said to Lon, I said, what were those lights?
Yeah. And it's not that, I mean, there were lights, and those are things that show up at different times. You know, they show up at different types of creature sightings. I have people who saw dragons, and they were seeing what they called fireballs in the sky before the dragons flew over. And they called them dragons because they had scales and they had, you know, the big bat-like wings. And I've also had it, I've had them reported with lots of different things, Bigfoot mm-hmm. and other stuff. So the lights don't really surprise me. But they weren't as pronounced a feature as they were on the TV show. They did not, and again, they didn't go to bed with the knives and things. There was no werewolf crashing through the window, and she didn't even, you know, they asked her if they could just show that as that she dreamed it, but I didn't think that was even clear that it was supposed to be a dream, and she hadn't really, you know. So
it wasn't at first.
Yeah, exactly. Things
scared the crap out of me.
I know. It was very scary. And I think a lot of people who've been inside and had things like that running outside have probably thought of it more than once, that they could come in through the window. And they have this feeling that these things are powerful and that they want to get at them. So, you know, it is a really terrifying thing. But things like that were, and they didn't stay in the same bed as their daughter. Their daughter was upstairs. They were downstairs. You know, so there are just a lot of things that were dramatized for TV. Mm-hmm. And you pretty much have to assume that's a given with almost, I've had enough experience with these different TV shows, having been on, I don't know, 15 or 16 of them. And they always, you know, it's drama and it's according to what they have in their script.
Now, what about this, the almost like the hole, the cave type den thing that you find? They show you in the beginning of the episode, the daughter and the son, or the son and the husband, they find this hole in the ground. Do you know what I'm talking about, guys?
Right.
When the daughter and her husband found the hole, yeah.
Yeah, I think again that was something that was dramatized. It was something that they didn't even include to me, and I talked to them a lot, and I mean hours and hours, and got drawings from them, and you know went over everything. I think that again it was something that was kind of exaggerated, and I'm not sure how would five of them have fit in a little hole like that. You know, it doesn't. If they were 7 feet tall, it just didn't. The other thing was that they showed them finding these perfect, beautiful, delineated prints in the mud, mm-hmm. you know, and of course people are asking, well, why didn't they make castles? The actual prints that they found were more like impressions in grass. They weren't really castable, and they did take photos of them. They did, but you know, when people who aren't into looking for cryptids or animal trophy takers, people aren't normally into casting every animal print they see. You know, it's doubtful they would even have plaster of Paris on hand. So why would these people who had just been terrorized go out the next morning and have all the stuff to make casts? That would almost be more suspicious to me.
plaster of Paris lying around.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
The one thing that got me was, you know, now on the show they show those lights. I mean, it almost looked like a spacecraft came down. But, you know, if they did see some lights, did they actually go out in the middle of the night, and the son and the father, and actually go out there without guns looking for this thing?
Yeah, that's another thing. I'm saying the whole thing was – that whole part of it was dramatized. I know they were out there at some time. I know they went out and looked. I'm not thinking that it was nighttime without guns.
Okay.
You know, but I know they went out and looked at the area at some point.
But, you know, you talked about phenomena as far as – you know, with cryptids and a lot of other things, even humanoid sightings where people do see these lights. And that's true. Yeah. And, I mean, that I do get that a lot of times. And, in fact, Eric can even attest that he has been on a site where they've seen lights as well, and in a Bigfoot area. And, you know, I don't know. I really don't have an explanation for it. You know, how I think with the multidimensional possibilities and such. I know you and I have discussed that before. Mm-hmm. Hey, what is your thought on that now, 2 years since I've talked to you about that the last time?
It's hard to say. You know, it's like they're – I tend to think of them as a sort of electromagnetic phenomenon that are related somehow to the creatures, whether their appearances are induced by some sort of extra – and I'm not a scientist, and so I'm just talking like a total layperson here. But I do know that you can have sort of pockets of electromagnetism, you know, our Earth is surrounded by it. It's how birds migrate. It's there. That's a real thing. And somehow, these creatures and those lights have a connection, and that would be one possible connection. A lot of people want to tell me that it's, we're seeing UFOs letting them out, letting the creatures out. That's a really popular theory. I don't, you know, and I don't know. I don't claim to know, and I don't claim to know any of these theories are true or not. Yeah. It's just all speculation, you know, until we can have something a little more concrete to go on. So I'm reluctant to really say.
Yeah, this, you know, I subscribe. I don't know. I'm kind of sitting on the fence when you talk about this. And, you know, I've written about it and I've talked about it. But, you know, you're like you said, you can't prove it unless you actually see it. You know, now you talked about
EMF. And even then you can't prove it.
Well, that's true, too. You know, and you talk about EMF. And, you know, now I have seen that phenomena. I have seen the phenomena where a high EMF field, visually, something can disappear in it. Mm-hmm. I have seen that. And, in fact, I'm working on a case now where that has actually been photographed as well. So I know that does happen. A lot of people say, well, you're crazy. You know, that doesn't happen. Well, it does happen.
It does. And I've seen the actual large lights myself a couple of different times in different situations. You know, so I know those exist. And I get reports of them all the time. You know, places like the Paulding Light in Michigan, people will see these red orb lights that go through their cars. They chase them around. Mm-hmm. They're not the same thing as high beams from cars on a nearby hill. There's two different kinds of lights there. But they've got some kind of electromagnetic phenomena going on there. Mm-hmm. I've seen what appeared to be a mass of electromagnetic energy in a place where there was supposed to be a ghost in Michigan called Basement Billy. And I perceived this glowing basketball-sized thing about 10 feet away from me. So I've seen them. I don't know how to explain it. I don't know what that was.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
You know, but I can't deny that I see it. And I can't deny that people see these things.
Well, it wasn't something I was privy to till about recently, Eric and guys. So the strange lights that you see when you're out there doing some of these investigations into some of these areas. It's very, very interesting, especially some of these areas we've had a lot of activity. No explanation I can give.
Very, very, very common, you know, that they show up. In fact, a radio show I did maybe a couple months ago, it was a really late night one. And it finished at 3 a.m. And I'm, you know, trudging up the stairs to the bed just after I hang up. And I happen to look out this window that looks over my backyard and looks into some fields and trees. And there was something that would have been the size of a setting moon, except it was 3 a.m. and the moon didn't set at that time. And it was orange. It was like fire orange that was just behind a tree, so I could see the outline of it, but the tree was bare. It was bare branches covering part of it. And I watched it, and it sat there. I have no idea what that thing was. It was sitting there, and then all of a sudden it dropped down, and it was gone. And I don't think a setting moon visibly drops down as you're watching it. You know, so I don't know how to explain that, you know.
You know how it is. The longer you do this type of stuff, you run into some more that you can't explain.
That's exactly true.
And why is that? Why?
Well, you know,
am I just more open to it, or, you know, I don't know.
I do think that you sort of open yourself up to some things just by being in these areas and by looking for things and you know, there's this old saying, go looking for the strange, and the strange comes looking for you.
Mm. Oh, I believe that.
Yeah, happens to everyone I know. Yeah.
I have a question getting back to the farmhouse, and this is kind of a serious question because we were talking about this in the chat room. They were in the house, and they were worried about these animals getting in the house. Did the house have doggy doors?
Not that I know of, but I think they were more worried. You know, like Shelley said, she was very aware that they could come through the window because they were large enough, and if they wanted to punch the window, that they could. You know, they just had ordinary window glass. You know, they knew that the animals were prowling right around the outside of it. So, no, they weren't worried about doggy doors. They were worried about these things just using brute force and coming in. And, you know, it's interesting. I was mentioning the 911 and the game warden calls.
Mm-hmm.
I tried, I made a lot of phone calls to Palmyra, Maine. I tried calling the sheriff's department. I tried calling different departments from the library that had connections to different city things. I could not get them to come up with any sort of 911 call. Shelly and Eric tried. And now, they should have been able to have access to their own 911 call. And they couldn't get anything.
Hmm.
They said, well, we had it, but then we changed it to a transcript and we lost the transcript. You know, how convenient. Exactly. Yeah. And also the Paranormal Witness producers tried to get a copy of the transcript. And they just completely refused to hand anything over. And that's supposed to be public information, you know. So that's a little weird, too. It makes me wonder if they had other reports that they didn't want them all to get out or what.
Well, that's just it. Yeah, that makes you think, well, maybe this is something that was a one-time deal. Because I have run across that before as well. And that was exactly the reason why they couldn't find the report, because other people were making reports.
Right.
So they wanted to keep it as quiet as possible.
Exactly.
That's interesting.
Now, the family moved away shortly after this encounter. Has any other family moved in there or reported anything since?
Yeah, it's had other families. I do not know that anyone else has had the same experience. I haven't heard of anybody reporting it. But, of course, if somebody had seen them and reported it, well, they're probably sitting on those reports, too.
Now, the creatures on the show, the five of them, were the representations on the show very similar to what the family described, or were their liberties taken there?
I think that they were a little more, you know, if you look at the drawings of by Shelley and Eric, which were done separately, they weren't looking at each other's work when they were drawing. I think that there's always a tendency to over-dramatize the animated creatures that they have in these programs. You know, I know Monster Quest did it, and some of the other ones have done it too. And I do think that these creatures on TV were a little more dramatically, you know, maybe a little burlier, a little more muscular. I'm not looking at one right now, so I couldn't tell you if they got the structure right. But
because in the show, they seem to appear to be these enormous dog-like. I mean, they weren't like a typical dog or wolf size. These things were almost as big as a Bigfoot.
Well, they were 7 feet tall, you know, according to Shelley and Eric, according to their height is measured against the shed door. And that's the general range of the dogman or wolfman estimates that I get are between 5 and 7 feet tall. Mm-hmm. And I do have timber wolves can grow to a size where if they stood up, they would be 7 feet tall. I've got pictures of some old ones that trappers took where they're hanging from a rope and you know, their feet are sort of dangly on the ground and they're a couple of heads taller than the guy standing next to him that shot them, you know. So, and you just can go by modern day measurements too. If a really big timber wolf could easily stand 7 feet tall if it stood up.
That's pretty frightening.
Yeah, I'm looking at Shelley's description right now when she did the interview. And, 7 foot, green-yellow fluorescent eyes.
Yeah, and that's
that
normal.
Glue, yeah.
That's the normal dog or wolf or canine eye shine color.
Mm-hmm. Maybe they were there just to play poker.
Could be. You know, dogs
seen
playing
the painting,
poker.
Dogs playing poker.
You know, the one thing is... Hopefully, Shelley's not exactly like she was portrayed on the TV, because if I told my wife to get in the house and she told me to let go of her arm, I'd throw her in the yard and run in the house and lock the door myself. I would not stand there and argue with my wife to get inside with these things in my yard. I was so mad at the TV.
Well, so and the man who played Eric was a lot more emotional during the whole thing than the real Eric was, you know. These are actors, and they're dramatizing things. And also, it was filmed in Canada, not at the original house.
Right.
So the whole setting is not the original setting that you see on TV.
Yeah, because it seemed like it was quite a large house. Was it a large house?
I think the farmhouse was I don't think it was as large
or
as fancy as that place. You know, what they were filming in looked almost like a lodge or something. But the farmhouse was nice-sized, and it was a nice home, but it wasn't – I don't think it was that big, according to their description.
Okay. Linda, you have had some recent experiences that I didn't know you had, and you did mention a Bigfoot encounter. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, it's crazy. And it after I had it, I agonized over whether I should tell anybody about it because, you know, when you do this sort of thing for a living, people are like, oh, yeah, it's convenient. Of course, she's going to see it. Well, it's been 20 years. So, and if I was going to make something up, it would be a dog man rather than, you know, rather than the Bigfoot. But, this occurred, and I wasn't expecting it. I wasn't out looking or anything like that. I was just, I do a lot of walking for my health, and there are trails around through the Kettle Moraine Forest area. There's a southern unit and a northern unit. I live really pretty close to the southern unit of the Kettle Moraine State Forest, and I have to explain what this is because it's sort of key.
Now, let me ask you, let me say one thing real quick.
Sure.
I have had reports from Kettle Moraine.
It does not surprise me, yeah.
And it must be a very active area.
It is. It is. I've been, right since the very beginning, 20 years ago, I started postulating that the dog man was coming. When I started tracking the sightings, I said right away, it looks to me like it's coming out on a foraging feeding loop from the southern unit of the Kettle Moraine State Forest and going around back in. It just looked really obvious to me on the map from the very beginning. And the Bigfoot, too. You know, I've got going on close to 20 really credible Bigfoot sightings just in this, in kind of the three-county area that's sort of encompassed around this state forest area, going back to the 60s. And that's throwing out – this is just the really credible ones. And I've been listing them in a lot of my books. I think I have it in Real Wolfman, too, just to let people know that there are the two different, very different types of creatures. They're not, you know, an amalgam of some sort. They're unique. Where people see one, they often see the other in the same district. But they seem to have sort of like their own territories carved out within these habitable areas. And I think the common denominator is they both like to eat deer. And this area is full of deer. Turkey, you know, it's just teeming with wildlife. And the Kettle Moraine is a really unusual geographical feature. It was left by the last glacier. And it's called the Kettle Moraine because it consists of large, deep, bowl-shaped depressions. Not like a shallow popcorn bowl, but like an actual cooking high-sided kettle that are separated by ridges called the moraines, and it goes on for many, many miles and many, you know, hundreds, thousands of square miles. There's a lot to it. And these kettles are not the – you can hike around through it, but the hikes don't usually take you into the kettles, maybe a few of the shallow ones. Most of them, people never go in it because they're very steep, they're very treacherous, they're very wooded. And I was walking along next to some of these kettles, and I've been walking this same area for 19, 20 years, so I know it really well. And it was just, I didn't even have a camera or a cell phone camera with me or anything like that. I just wanted to take a walk and get back. It was about 7 o'clock on a Sunday evening, and there are homes in the area, but I kind of know people around this area, and I knew that there were no people. It's a lot of them are weekend, and they were gone at the time. So it's very quiet. There had been no storms for a long time. The woods were quiet. I'm walking back on my way back home, and all of a sudden I notice that these three saplings were bent over in a perfect rainbow arch for no apparent reason. There was no other wind blow around them. There was nothing that indicated why these three saplings should have been bent around like that. And I thought, well, I know that's supposed to be a sign of a Bigfoot territory, you know, but I just kind of brushed it aside, but I kept thinking about it, and I went a little farther, and I came to this opening where I have permission to go into this area sometimes, and I thought, well, I've never done this before, I really haven't, but I thought, why don't I just bang on a tree a couple of times, and just see if anything happens, you know, nobody was around, I knew nobody was going to be down there, I knew nobody would see me or hear me, so I picked up this big log, thing and banged on this tree, and the kettles sort of reverberate the sound. They're almost like it's having a succession of amphitheaters. And there was one to my right, one to my left. I'm standing on the ridge between them. And then there were successions of kettles behind those that went into sort of a marshy area that led around to the lake. So it was a kind of a wide open area. Well, lo and behold, to my shock and surprise, after I did that a couple of times, I got a return knock. And, you know, I'm thinking, well, only something with an opposable thumb could do that. Either somebody's spoofing me down there, you know, or there's a Bigfoot, one or the other. And I thought, I'm going to flush him out. Because I was higher up on the ridge, and I was only about 10 feet from the trail I'd been walking. And I thought, I can get back there, you know, fast if I need to. So I hit it again, and I got another knock back. So I'm really intrigued. And it seemed to come from this one big tree that didn't look like it was very climbable. And I did it a couple of more times to make a long story short. And the next thing I know, well, I heard some big rustling too. So I knew there was something very large down there. Something was moving, and it was so green. This was like in mid-July, and it was just completely overgrown with green. So I couldn't see what, but I could see the branches moving. The next thing I know, there's a huge cracking, ripping storm. If you've ever heard it, like a tree branch crack in an ice storm, That was the sound. This tree was maybe, really hard to estimate because it was across the kettle from me. I don't know, maybe a couple hundred feet, something like that. It wasn't really very far. And because the tree was growing down from in the kettle, and I'm standing up on this ridge, the branch that was maybe 35 feet above the kettle base was at my eye level. This branch, something tore it from the tree. It was a 35-foot-long live oak branch with lots of green leaves growing on it, no wilt or whatever. Tore it from the tree and first moved it in like a 90-degree arc until it was pointing straight at me, at my eye level. And then...
Wow.
And then there was another crack, and it ripped it all the rest of the way off and dropped it down to the kettle floor. And at that moment, I knew in my bones that that was a deliberate act, That it was telling me to get out of there, that it was something with tremendous strength because I could see the fresh wood. I could see it wasn't, it didn't look like some old rotten thing. There were no other trees moving. There wasn't a thing moving in that woods except where it had moved. And I knew what it was. There's just no doubt in my mind because there's nothing else that could do that.
Sure.
You know, maybe the largest Kodiak bear could. We have black bears occasionally go through, but hardly any. And a black bear wouldn't do that. It would, if it was angry at me, it would come down from the tree and charge at me. I lived in Wisconsin up north. My dad's from up north. I have had a lot of experience with black bears. So I knew it wasn't, there wasn't any other possibility. So I ran home. At that point, I dropped the log and I left. But I was back within half an hour with a friend of mine who is a trained investigator and her 21-year-old daughter, who's a trained skeptic. And we went down in there because I had to know. I couldn't sleep. I had to know if, for some reason, that branch had been there are pileated woodpeckers around. I thought maybe there was a woodpecker that, you know, had weakened it. Maybe there were saw marks on it, you know, that somebody had been up there trying to saw the branch down or something. There was nothing. It was completely torn, twisted, fresh wood, 35 feet long, and it had a 8 to 9 inch diameter at the base where it joined the tree.
Wow.
And it was fresh oak wood. Not only that, we found two mitten-shaped bark rubs positioned on the branch exactly at the right places where something would bend over. If you were going to try and twist a log off a tree, you'd place one hand on one side, one on the other, and then you'd push, you know. And we found none of the other trees had anything like that on them if it was some sort of disease. It was the only place on the tree where there was a bark rub, and they were shaped like a giant 9-inch mitten. Is the only way. I have photographs of this. You can go to lindagodfrey.com and see some pictures on my blog. But not only that, and I'm only getting to the good part, we found one of the pieces. I still have it. One of the pieces that had been rubbed off, and it looked like if you put your hand on a piece of flat paper and then crumpled the paper, how it would bend. It's hard to describe, but I got a picture of that up too. So anyway, we could smell it. At that point, there was this overwhelming musky skunk-like odor, and we have a lot of skunks around here, so I know very well what a skunk like. And Sandra Touche, we agreed it was like a skunk, but it wasn't a skunk, and it was mixed with some other kind of musk and the tree resin, you know, and it was almost overwhelming. And we thought, we're suddenly conscious that we're on the bottom of this kettle, and anything could come and get it. So we walked up the back. We were standing on the back ridge looking out over these other kettles that were sort of marshy. And at that point, my friend's daughter saw it, and she screamed. And what she said she saw was larger than a human. It was just, she saw it, what she called striding. She said, she's grasping for words because she's not into this stuff at all. She said it was not walk. It was not really walking, not really running. It was moving really fast into this undergrowth area. And she said it was striding. That's what it was. And she saw what she described as beige, grayish beige fur. Uh-huh. And that it was, and she didn't know there was such a thing as a blonde Bigfoot, you know, that they have these lighter colors. And I've got other corroborating sightings of that same color in the area. So she had a pretty good look at it. And, of course, by the time Sandra and I swiveled our heads and looked, it had just disappeared into this undergrowth from where it proceeded to growl at us.
Mm.
And the growl sounded very close. It was hard to tell exactly how far it was. I don't know if maybe there were two of them. And it was a growl that I've never heard before, except on some of the sites that have the Bigfoot vocalizations. And the hair stood up on the backs of all our necks. And I said, ladies, that means we have to get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it was ready to come charging at us. There's just nothing else that lives in this area that would growl at us like that without revealing itself or... You know, if it was a black bear and it was mad, we would have seen it by then.
Even if it was a cat, it'd come at you. I mean,
exactly.
It would have sat there, you know.
Exactly,
That's amazing. And yeah. Stride. Oh, you know.
Yep.
I wish that's a perfect description of how these things move.
Yep.
Very fluid.
Yeah, very fluid.
Graceful,
yeah.
Built
exactly.
For its environment.
Exactly. And she's not one that reads of these things or, you know, is into it at all. And, you know, but she's a believer now, but she wasn't at all before. She was a total skeptic. Yeah. And so it was really kind of mind blowing for me. And since then, I've had two other incidents where I've just happened to be in the right place and looked, and then inexplicably a branch is yanked off a tree. Where it's not a storm condition, nothing else is moving. Mm-hmm. It's like, and something is down in the kettle pulling the tree, and I can't see what's pulling it. That happened actually just 2 weeks ago, the last time. I've also seen a foot sticking out from behind a tree when I least expected it. This was actually right in the Kettle Moraine State Forest when I was on a TV shoot, standing with, actually I was standing with somebody people would know, I won't mention his name. And he didn't see it because he wasn't looking exactly at the right spot. But what I saw was, this is an area where I really feel there are Bigfoot based on sightings and other incidents. And so I was looking carefully. We were both looking. We were kind of scanning the trees. And I saw what looked like the most giant human foot I've ever seen, except the top of it was covered with gray fur. And I could see where the big toe was separated. And the minute I locked onto it, the rest of it was hidden behind a tree, whatever was attached to that foot. The minute I locked onto it, the foot lifted ever so slightly above the ground and moved itself backward ever so slowly until it was hidden in some shrubs. And it took like about, you know, 1 second to do that. And I'm going, hey, did you see that? Did you see that? And, of course, the TV person who was shooting was over somewhere else, shooting someone else. So he wasn't around. And then there were two branch snaps right after it. So, you know, I'm pretty confident that's what it was. If it hadn't been, you know, and the big branch thing, if it hadn't been for all the other corroboration, my friend's daughter seeing it, us smelling it, finding the mitten rubs, you know, the growl, all that. Am I knowing that this is a territory where there's a large backlog of other sightings? It's not like it's the first and only Bigfoot sighting in this area. I probably would still have been a lot doubtful, but you put all that together, you know, and then it builds a much stronger scenario.
Well, Eric, you want to take a break?
Yeah, let's go ahead and do that. I was sitting here listening to the fascinating encounters Linda's been having. And kind of jealous, actually.
Well, I don't know if I would be. I'm not sure I ever want to have that one again. It was terrifying.
Yeah,
when you realize the brute force strength that it takes to rip a live oak branch off of a tree.
It's pretty strong.
Yeah, with no cuts or anything.
That's pretty strong. Wow. Impressive. Folks, we're talking with the one and only Linda Godfrey tonight. She is an investigative reporter, an author, an investigator. She goes out there and looks for crazy, creepy creatures like the Dog Man, the Wolf Man, and now Bigfoot. She's out there looking all the time in the forests of Wisconsin and all over the Northeast. Great guest, as always, one of our favorites on the program tonight. To find out more about Linda, go to her website, lindagodfrey.com. It'll give you an updated list of where she's appearing at, some of the books that she's written, her latest, of course, being The Real Wolfman, True Encounters in Modern America. And we'll talk to her a little bit tonight. Maybe she'll give us a little sneak peek about a new book that's coming out that she's finishing up on. So we invite you to keep it right where it's at. We'll open the phone lines after the break as well. This is BTE Radio, Beyond the Edge Radio, live here on the Para X Radio Network. More with Linda Godfrey after the break.
Radio. We'll be right back.
See walking in these woods. Why, it's Little Red Riding Hood. Hey there, Little Red Riding Hood. You sure are looking good. You're everything a big bad wolf could want. Listen to me.
Hey there, Little Red Riding Hood. You're all looking awfully good tonight there, Mr. Forkchop.
Well, thank you, Eric.
Your red cape and cloak.
Oh, stop it, you sweet talker.
Welcome back to the show. This is BTE Radio, Beyond the Edge Radio, live here on the Para X Radio Network. And this is Eric Altman, your host with the most and a nasty head cold, joining you tonight on the show.
Host with the most mucus.
That's right. And with me, as always, as you've guessed, the ever-colorful color commentator, Sean the Forkchop Forker. And our one and only co-host with the most, Juan Strickler from Phantoms and Monsters. And our special guest tonight joining us on the program, Linda Godfrey. We are so glad that Linda's back with us after a two-year hiatus. And I honestly thought we had her on a lot sooner than 2 years ago. But Juan corrects me on that, says, nope, it was September of 2011. So we're happy, Linda, that you're back with us tonight joining us on the show and giving us an update as to what you've been up to. You've been quite busy these last couple of years.
Well, you know, you don't want to let the moss gather under your feet.
Mm.
And that you haven't done. From Bigfoot encounters to writing new books about the Dog Man and the werewolves and keeping up on some of these strange things that have been going on out in our
And place. Writing a novel.
Yes. And
a
new book on the way as well.
Right.
While we're discussing your new project, if you're able to do that, I know there's kind of some things that you can't talk about, but if you're able to talk a little bit about the new project, we'd love to hear it. We're going to open up the phone lines as well while we're discussing it. For folks that want to call in tonight and talk with you, the number to call in is 877-677-2858. Again, 877-677-2858, toll free. And if you can't get through on that line, we have a second number, which is 724 area code. 724-1494. Again, 724 area code 824-1494 to call and talk with Linda tonight. Ask your questions about the Dogman, the werewolves, even Bigfoot. She checks into all these creepy critters and hairy hominids and monsters. And hey, she might even had a sighting of Forker on the way to the deli getting a late night snack. You never know. So
watch it, Altman.
Hey, you admitted it. You admitted it. And that growl you heard, Linda, that growl you heard might have been Sean's stomach, so.
It probably is. I'm starving here.
Yeah. But tell us about this new project you're working on and what you can talk about, and we're excited to hear all about it.
I will. Yeah, a little bit. Do you mind if, since you mentioned my novel, do you mind if I just give the title of that real quick in case anybody was curious?
Yeah.
It's a paranormal fantasy. It's called God Johnson, and it's a tale of disciple-starved demigods, pet sphinxes, and even Abraham Lincoln.
Awesome.
Is in there. It was reviewed by Fairy Chicks Fantasy Book Reader Club.
Awesome. I wonder who that is.
Yeah.
Hey, we do have a phone call calling in. Somebody from the 267 area code, welcome to BTE Radio. What's your name and where are you calling from tonight?
Hi, my name is Phoenix. I'm from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Well, thank you for calling in tonight. You have a question for our guest, Linda Godfrey, tonight on the show.
Yes. First, I'd like to say, guys, great show. And Linda, amazing work. I love your research.
Thank you so much.
Quick little mini story. I'll make it very brief and just a question. In early January of 2012, I spent about a month in Michigan, in Lansing, visiting a friend. She had gone to bed early, and I couldn't sleep, so I was sitting in her living room, and out her back window was a very large window facing the woods area. I forget exactly where we were by the woods, but it was somewhere in Lansing. I'm not too familiar with that area by heart, so forgive me. And it was around midnight, quite dark, but the moon was full, and you could see really well. Nice, fresh snow laid down, and something had walked behind her large garage very silently, gracefully, as you were mentioning earlier, which really made my thoughts go to this. And it kind of, not floated, I mean, it just very gracefully and lightly walked across the yard, the back of the house, to the middle of the fence to the next house. Very elegantly went over the fence. And as it did that, it looked at me looking at it through the window.
Whoa.
And I dropped my drink because I had hot chocolate at the time, and she
came in
and yelled at me because there's a big stain on her white carpet. And she said, what was that? And I'm like, did you just see that? And she's like, no. And I had just read about the Dog Man because I thought that I was relocating through Michigan, which didn't happen. And I had joined a group online, and I had found out about the story of the Dog Man, which I had not heard of previously.
Right.
And my question is, could that very well have been that? And have there been many sightings in Lansing, or is it more always deep into the woodlands and not so much in the rural area? And I actually didn't even give you the description very well of what it looked like. But it wasn't human. It was very dark, gray, blackish in fur. And when its eyes looked at me, it had a very reddish eye shine. And then it slowly went over. The next morning, we had found tracks, and I didn't know what to do with them. She had taken pictures on her iPhone, but now me and this particular friend are estranged, so she never sent me the photographs, which I still know she has, and I'm begging her constantly with emails to send me the photographs, but she still never has done that. But she did witness the tracks, and they were dog-like in appearance, but I am not a hunter nor a tracker, and I don't have the photographs to give to anyone to relate it to get it verified.
Did you say they were dog-like?
Yes. To me, it looked, because I have friends that have dogs, and, you know, we'll walk in the snow, and I've seen, right, you know, prints, and it looked very dog-like in appearance, I guess, if that makes any sense.
Well, there's a big difference, yeah, between, it was sounding more like Bigfoot to me, but Bigfoot prints are really unmistakable. I've seen some myself. They're huge and they're very human-like and they're flat-footed. The dog prints are kind of more, you know, circular with toe pads and claw points You know, so there's quite a difference between the prints. If you ever could get the photos, I could probably tell you one way or the other. The red eye shine is something that's a little more usual for Bigfoot than the Dogman. I very seldom get that for sightings of Dogman. It's almost always the yellow, yellow, gold, and yellow, green.
Right.
But the Bigfoot, if it's more of a primate, it shouldn't have that same kind of membrane that the canines do. And bears also have more of a reddish eye shine, but a bear wouldn't be walking upright and easily going over the fence. The way that you describe it moving sounds more like a Bigfoot to me, but it's really hard to say without having seen more of the features. If you saw a muzzle or pointed ears, those would be more canine characteristics. It's hard to say with this amount of description.
Yeah, it was quite. I mean, the moon was in, but the moon was facing me, so the light coming towards me was kind of overshadowing the silhouette of what it was. But it definitely wasn't a man, and if it was, he was quite tall because it was about 7 feet tall from what I could see. Because I know her fence line and the tree behind it. You could see the silhouette of fur, you know, unless it was a furry coat, but I highly doubt that.
Sure. And I think I recall having a Dogman sighting from around Lansing not very long ago. I don't have it right in front of me. I've been to Lansing to take a picture of the world's largest lug nut.
I did that too.
for my weird Michigan book. You can find it in there. But there are, to answer your other questions, the sightings are not confirmed to deep woods, especially for the Dogman, because they can get about just as easily on all fours as on two legs. And if you saw one on all fours, you just think there's a really weird-looking, huge, huge, huge dog thing. That's how people usually describe it, until it stands up. But if it just keeps going on all fours, it can get around in lots of places without, you know, attracting too much attention. So they get into, and they do go up to people's houses and look in. I've had them reported on a number of different freeway on-off ramps at different places. So just because it's a civilized area doesn't mean, you know, that it couldn't have been the upright canine.
Right. Well, I thank you very much. I appreciate what you're doing. Again, guys, great show.
Thanks. Thank you.
Thanks for calling in tonight.
Have a good night. Yes.
Have a wonderful night. And see how easy it is, folks, to call in 724-824-1494 or toll-free 877-677-2858. Call in to ask our guest tonight, Linda Godfrey, a question. Tell a story that she'd like to hear. I know she loves collecting these stories, as we like to hear them as well. Or if you've got a comment, you want to talk to her about her book or her upcoming novel, which she's written, we're going to find a little bit more about it here and other works that she's working on. So, Linda, let's continue with your novel that you were telling us about.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It does not have werewolves in it. I have to tell you that in advance. But, you know, I wanted to do some other things, and study and do other ideas and just make kind of a break from the usual things. But it's paranormal fantasy, and you can go on Amazon.com or you can go on my website, lindagodfrey.com, and there's a page with links and find out more about it there. But the book I just finished last Tuesday is another one for Tarcher Penguin. It'll be out in early 2014. I can't say a lot about it other than that it takes a much broader spectrum look at a wider range of things. You know, it's not just about Wolfman. In fact, most of it isn't. So I had a lot of really interesting research to do. I was delving into a lot of areas that I normally don't. You know, I had mentioned earlier the dragons, and that will be in there. That's something that if you've read my Monsters of Wisconsin book, you read a short version of. I went back and revisited it and found more witnesses, got witness sketches, found out a lot more. Made it a lot stronger, and I'm kind of amazed at it. I also have really pretty, one of the most amazing large bird encounters and sightings that I've had. This was, usually people will either just see them flying or they'll, you know, see them on the ground. Or this guy was on a bicycle, not a car. He was able to get off the bicycle. He was so excited. He saw this gigantic bird standing in a field. and this is up kind of between near northern Minnesota, but just into Wisconsin. And he started running into the field at this bird because he wanted. He was just so amazed. It's like the most amazing thing he ever saw. And of course, he startled it. It turned around, saw him, startled it, and took off. And it was like this, you know, small airplane taking off. And he was able to. It was really gigantic. I was able to meet with him at the site. We measured the road. Its wingtips covered the road, and I measured the road. The road was between 18 feet and 22 feet at that point. And he watched it flap slowly away. So he saw it not only standing, but quite close, saw it take off and saw it fly, you know, all three things. So he wasn't just seeing something high up in the air and trying to guesstimate its size. He had comparisons to it. So, you know, things like that. It's been really fun and interesting to look for things that aren't on my ordinary slate.
You know, I have to say, you talking about your novel, God Johnson, my wife Vanessa, who actually also did a review of the book. She was sitting there reading it, and she turned over to me. She said, "What else does Linda write about?" I said, "Why?" She said, "This is the oddest thing I've ever read."
Well, you know, the person who writes Weird Michigan and Weird Wisconsin, I'm going to have a weird book. Somebody else described it as like a combination of how do they put that? Sookie Stackhouse meets, I'm just totally blanking on it, The Place at the End of the Universe. Why can't I think of the right name in the title of that book? Adams. Oh, well, never mind. I'm totally blowing this whole thing. But but bless her heart for reviewing it. And, yeah, it's very different fantasy. It's not unfollowable, I don't think. I've got some pretty good reviews on Amazon.com.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's a lot of fun. People tell me they have fun with it, and that's kind of what I wanted to do, was write something. And there's some, I think, thought-provoking things in it, too. It's not.
Oh, she enjoyed it. She enjoyed it immensely. But she was, you know, she just looked at me, and she said, "What does she write about?" I said, "Well, werewolves, dogmen, and cryptids." And she just looked at me and said, "Oh, okay."
That made sense.
And the folks in the chat room just wanted to let you know the name of that book is Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Hitchhiker's Guide. Thank you. Yeah, that's it. Yes. Combination of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy meets Sookie Stackhouse is how somebody described it.
Wow. That's eclectic.
It's really like neither one, but you try and imagine those two marrying and having a mutant baby, and that might be kind of like God Johnson.
Oh, that's amazing. Linda, unfortunately, we only have a few minutes left in the show tonight, and it always flies by when we have such a great guest on the program, such as yourself. We've really enjoyed talking with you tonight, as we always do, and I'm hoping you'll come back again. Love
Anytime.
To have you.
Anytime.
Before we go, though, I know you have some upcoming events and some new of course, you have the new work coming out, which we can't talk about right now, but when is that due to be released?
I'm looking at early 2014.
Awesome.
I don't have an exact release date yet, but I'll be talking about it once I get past some of the early edits on the manuscript. I'll maybe be able to say a little bit more. And you can just watch my blog, lindagodfrey.com. Sign up for Twitter. Follow me on Twitter, because I often post little blobs or blurbs about sightings that I get on there.
Fantastic.
And I post. I'm a real Twitter net, so.
Oh, great.
Me too.
Great. So
I love it.
We can have you back on the show when the book comes out then?
Anytime. I'm all yours.
Fantastic. Thank you, Linda. We appreciate it. Where are you going to be at? So folks that want to come out and meet you and get an autographed copy of the book or one of the new books that you've written, where can we find you at?
Well, one of my next upcoming things is going to be September 22nd, I'm going to be at UW Waukesha at the Southeast Wisconsin Book Fest.
I'll be
giving a talk at noon on Sunday, and you can find that on my calendar at lindagodfrey.com. I'm also going to be, I've got a bunch of other things you can see on there. I'm especially always excited to be at the Burlington Vortex Festival. which is something really amazing. You should look. Go ahead and follow the link and look that place up at the Sci-Fi Cafe in Burlington. And that will be, I think, on the 27th of October.
Yeah, I was looking at your... I stop by your website periodically, your blog, and check out where you're going to be, hoping that you'll come to Pennsylvania one of these days so I can finally meet you in person. I haven't seen anything yet, but I'm keeping my fingers crossed. But you have a lot of appearances, a lot of radio interviews coming up, and you keep yourself quite busy.
Well, it's a fascinating world, and I like to talk about it. So, and as long as people keep listening, I'm happy.
We love to hear about it from you as well.
Thank you. So, thanks.
Linda, thanks for stopping by and spending some time with us this evening. We appreciate it as always. Love to have you on with us, and we'll look forward to talking to you in the new year when your new book comes out.
Can't wait.
Have a wonderful rest of your Sunday night, and we'll be in touch very soon.
You too.
Good night.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Linda.
Linda Godfrey, folks, what a wonderful woman, a great author, a great investigator, talking about dogmen, werewolves, Bigfoot, all kinds of crazy cryptids, and we always love having Linda on the show with us. A great show next week, guys. Another great author and friend of the show coming on to talk about flying humanoids.
Ooh. Yeah, Ken Gerhard.
Yes, Ken will be joining us.
Very interesting show. It's an excellent book. And there's a lot of neat stuff in there, so we'll be talking about that next week.
I spent the weekend with Ken at the ParaFest conference out in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania this past weekend, and I caught part of his presentation where he does do a summary of what's in the book, talking about the Mothman, of course, and some of the different cryptids he discussed, the Batman of Houston, the Owlman, and you'll find all that in his book. It's called Encounters with Flying Humanoids, Mothman, Man-Birds, Gargoyles, and Other Winged Beasts. Ken was kind enough to sign a copy for me and present it to me this weekend. And Ken, if you're listening tonight, my buddy, my friend, I got to say thanks, buddy. I really appreciate that. Great to have the book from you. And I've got to get Linda's book as well on the Dogman and Werewolf book. I love her work. She's a great woman, and we're so happy that she was able to join us tonight on the show, guys.
Yeah, fantastic show tonight.
Yeah, it's always good having Linda around. I mean, her and I correspond once in a while. And, some of the stuff she finds and people send to her, it's really neat stuff. And it's good, it's good research reference material as well. Mm-hmm. So, folks, if you get a chance, buy one of Linda's books. They're very interesting.
They're available on Amazon.com, and you can get more information on her website, lindagodfrey.com as well. And there's a link for it on our webpage right now. Go to our website, beyondtheedgeradio.com. And I have to say a special thank you to all the people that stopped by our booth, my booth this weekend at the ParaFest. What great compliments we got on the show, guys. A lot of fans stopped by to meet me and to say what great jobs you guys do, Sean and Lon. They really enjoy the show. We're getting better every time we're on. More and more followers, more and more listeners. So thank you, everybody, who stopped by. Thank you, everybody, who tuned in tonight to the program. And we really appreciate each and every one of you. We're on every Sunday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time here on the ParaX Radio Network live. And our archives can be heard at Podomatic, on Stitcher Radio, iTunes, a variety of different websites. So make sure you check that out. Last week's show isn't still being edited. I'm still in the process of doing that, being that I was out of town. But that'll be up in the next couple of days, as well as tonight's interview. It'll be up in the next couple of days as well. So keep watch out for that on our Facebook page, facebook.com/beyondtheedgeradio, and on our website, beyondtheedgeradio.com. And with that, guys, we're about ready to hit the road. Do you guys have anything else before we call it a night?
I'll be working on the website this week, so it may be sporadic. So if folks are going to the website, be not afraid. It's just getting a little bit of a makeover.
And I'm just going to do what I do, so I'll talk to everybody next week.
I'll just do what I do. I love it, Mark. Yeah. Got to love it. And, I'll be doing what I do. I'll be down at the Mothman Festival in 2 weeks, September 22nd, I believe, is the date. I'll be down there visiting some good friends and meeting some new people. So if you're going to be at the Mothman Festival, make sure you look me up. And with that, guys, let's call it a night. Let's head for home, shall we?
Indeed.
All right. This is BTE Radio, Beyond the Edge Radio, live here on the ParaX Radio Network. As I said, every Sunday night, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Thank you all for tuning in. Have a great rest of your Sunday night, and we'll catch you again next Sunday night right here on the ParaX Radio Network.
Yeah. Join us for another live edition of Beyond the Edge Radio, Sunday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the Para X Radio Network. Archive shows are available on Podomatic, Parapods, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, the Para X Radio Network, or our official website, beyondtheedgeradio.com. To contact Eric, Ron, or Sean, email us at beyondtheedgeradio@gmail.com. Beyond the Edge Radio is a Beyond the Edge Entertainment production heard here on the Para X Radio Network.